After the fire in Apollo 1, Gene, you had a meeting. What did you say, and what was the result of your...
Well, this was, I had a bunch of young pups. They'd never been through a disaster of this type before, and I got them all in a conference room. And I started off talking about the fact that we ought to assume responsibility because we were behind the power curve in our work in mission control. The control center wasn't ready. The training process wasn't working. Nobody really had done their job. And I think across the board from a standpoint of program, we all had to assume responsibility for that particular failure and the loss of the crew. And basically, I talked about and established two words, which are going to be the sounding board. We're going to use tough and competent. We're going to put it on our blackboards, and we won't erase it until we finish the Apollo program. Tough meaning we are forever accountable for what we do, and in the case of Apollo 1, what we failed to do. I was in the console on the shift before that accident, and there are things I think I could have done.
Yeah. Walt, so you're on the crew for 7. First manned flight. How confident were you in the entire process because you were going to fly it?
Well, at the time we flew, I was quite confident in it. But what people today don't realize is if you talk about the Apollo program today, most of the public thinks of Apollo 11, maybe Apollo 13 and that. But to put the whole thing in perspective, we were originally, Wally Schraw, Don Isley, and I were on Apollo 2 crew, the same spacecraft as Apollo 1. All the changes we were trying to make in it caused a lot of delays. It got canceled. Then we became the backup crew for Apollo 1. After 3 months, we had the fire on the pad and lost our prime crew. 3 weeks later, we got the first Apollo mission. And I have to tell you that the spacecraft was certainly not great, like Gene said, but in the next 21 months, we lived at the contractors. I was on the road maybe 275 days 1 year, I remember. But we, I think it was 1,040 changes that were made in the spacecraft, some of which were for the systems and the mechanics. But a lot of it was for the operational changes that we had wanted to do before and had been passed up because of the delay that it would cause in the schedule. So we got all those kind of things in. So when Apollo 7 actually flew, it was the most successful first test flight ever, even to this day. And I'll add one more thought here, what the public doesn't think about. That was the first of 5 giant steps to the moon, every one of which was very critical. And we tested the command module. And Apollo 8, it broke the concern people might have from getting away from the Earth's gravity. They went out around the moon. Apollo 9, then they were testing the lunar module. That was done in Earth orbit here. I think that was a pretty risky mission because if they couldn't get back together, there was no heat shield on the lunar module. In Apollo 10, they had a complete rehearsal for the Apollo 11 landing right down to 50,000 feet. So when Apollo 11 went, actually everything had been done before except that last 50,000 feet. But it was one hell of a fine job, nearly perfect.
Frank and Jim. See, I'm saying Frank and Jim now. I don't know, is that right? And I said, okay. Frank, Apollo 8. The mission was changed from what to what and why?
Well, Jim and Bill Anders and I were originally on Apollo 9, which was really a repeat of Apollo 8, a Earth orbital rendezvous mission with the lunar module and the command module. The lunar module, thanks to Fred's diligent inspection of it, it was way behind, and so... I didn't mean it that way. I mean, you're making it perfect. and the CIA had pretty good information that the Soviets were going to go to around the moon before the end of the year. So we were out at Downey. I got a call from Deke Slayton to come back. I got in the airplane, went back there, and I walked in the room, and he said, "We want to change Apollo 8. I want to change your mission to Apollo 8 and go to the moon in a lunar orbit mission in December. Can you do it? And I said yes. And I went back and told Jim and Bill, and I think we're all delighted with that mission on that change. Well, it turned out to be a very exciting process, and it all worked perfectly.
So describe the mission, Jim. You launch and you head to the moon, you leave Earth's gravity. First time human beings had ever done that, right?
Well, there are certain changes that were required. Number one was the fact that we weren't going to do an Earth orbit, but we're doing the navigation 240,000 miles all the way to the moon. So one of the changes that had to be made in the short time that was allotted was changing the whole navigation system. And consequently, I caught myself up at MIT a couple days and learning the new technique that they had developed for using the stars for navigation. And then, of course, our other job was looking for suitable landing spots to make sure that the spacecraft that would land, which we didn't know at that time, we'd have the greatest chance of survival. So those spots would be the smooth areas. We call it the Mare or the seas. But I think that when we look back at Apollo 8 with Frank and Bill and myself, that what really came from it was several things. One, and I think that Bill says it graciously, Bill has always mentioned that, hey, we went to the moon to explore the moon, and we discovered the Earth, which I think it puts it in just a one thing. Bill's photograph, I think, said it all in one.
So you admit that Bill Anders took that photograph?
Well, that's been 25, 30 years, I guess.
They're very reluctant, but yes.
Yeah. And then coming back, and you have to remember the tenure of the time. I mean, 1968, the Vietnam was going on. There was dissidence in the universities. There was two assassinations of prominent people. There was disruption in the Democratic convention. And yet, in the last bit of the flight, just in taking off on the 21st of December, three guys to orbit the moon for the very first time, and to mention that the first 10 verses of Genesis, which I thought was very appropriate at that time that we did that, to come back, I think that put a cap, finally, on a very sort of bad year of 68. And what was that? You got an email, or not an email those days, a telegram, I'm sorry.
Thank you, Apollo 8, you saved 1968.
Wow.
Saved 1968.
Yeah. Yeah. When you got around to the back of the moon, how surprised were you at what the back of the moon looked like, if at all?
Well, we had photographs of the back of the moon prior to us going. So we did have some pretty good idea. The far side of the moon is not like the near side. The near side has these huge seas, Sea of Tranquility, Sea of Serenity. The backside is more concentrated in smaller craters, lots of craters. There's two prominent features that the Russians first found, because they were the first people to actually photograph the backside, but the only thing that really came out of their photographs was one of a crater called Tsiolkovsky, which is a beautiful crater with a white center and a dark mare in the middle. And then the Sea of Moscow, which they named, which is the one sort of large area of a, imagine of a hit of something, much like the near side, but most of it is gray sand or gray looking, no color whatsoever, sort of forbidden in a little way, some awe-inspiring in some other way, and it was something that you realized what was there, and it was challenging, But like I said, I think what we brought back more so than the later lunar flights, because the ones that landed on the moon, that was their job. Our job was really to open up the fact that what we really had back here on Earth, that for the very first time.
What was that moment like when you finally saw Earth? And
I don't hear too well. What'd you say? What'd he say?
He said, what was it like when we first saw Earth?
Well, I think that was the high point of the mission for all of us, looking back at the Earth. It's the only place in the whole universe that had any color. And we were a long way from home, and I that sort of focused our attention for longer than it. I had these trouble keeping these guys busy doing their job because they were looking at the Earth. But I want to mention one other thing. You know, we had, 4 months, right, Jim, to prepare for a, and usually it takes at least over a year to prepare for a flight. And in one afternoon, we were able to knock out a flight plan for Apollo 8, thanks to the genius and the leadership of Chris Kraft, one of the great, great, I would say, heroes of NASA, and the only one that's still living. They're all there. So I think any discussion of the Apollo program is remiss if you don't mention the part that Chris Kraft had in it.